The new film Prey isn't just another installment of the Predator science fiction franchise. For one thing, it's a prequel to the original 1987 movie, set more than 300 years ago. More important, however, is who's telling the story this time. A tough, smart, young Comanche woman determined to prove herself, as well as to protect her people and her dog. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about Prey on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me today is Sam Yellowhorse Kessler, a producer for NPR's Planet Money. Welcome back, Sam.
Happy Prey Day, Glenn.
Happy Prey Day. So The Predator debuted in 1987. In that film, Arnold Schwarzenegger and a team of commandos are hunted by the alien Predator while on a mission in Central America. Prey is now the latest and seventh film in the Predator franchise. This time, it's a prequel and takes place in 1719 in the northern Great Plains of what is now the United States. Amber Midthunder plays Nadu, a young Comanche woman trained as a healer who longs to be her hunter. Her older brother Tabe, played by Dakota Beavers, discourages this, but she doesn't let that stop her. She secretly trains with weapons and one day sets out with her dog to hunt down a mountain lion that has attacked one of her tribe's hunters. We, the audience, know exactly what you'll encounter in the woods because we've seen Predator movies before. So when she's faced with the huge, spine-ripping alien outfitted with advanced technology, including camouflage armor that renders it basically invisible, she uses her knowledge of medicine, tracking, and animal behavior to step up to the challenge. Prey was directed by Dan Trachtenberg, who previously directed 10 Cloverfield Lane. It clocks in at a lean, efficient 99 minutes, and it's currently streaming on Hulu, where you can watch it in English or dubbed in Comanche. Hulu says the movie had the biggest premiere of any film or TV series on the streaming service, so it's clearly connected with viewers. Did it connect with you, Sam? What'd you think?
Well, you said it, Glenn. 99 minutes. That alone should be enough to get you to put this on. That is just brilliant for an action movie. But overall, I also just generally liked this way more than I expected to. I, you know, initially heard the kind of logline of Predator prequel set in the Comanche Nation, and I was a little bit hesitant. I was like, you know, maybe this will be decent. Maybe this will be a fun kind of goofy action movie. But as soon as I sat down to watch it, just a few minutes in, I was just, you know, it was fun to watch. I really like the direction that this film took with the franchise.
Well, that's interesting. And we'll talk about that eye rolling, that cringe element that it really could have slipped into very easily. But man, this is such a, you said it, a lean, efficient little film, moves along in a fast clip. It is also well made, right? Early scenes plant seeds that pay off at the climax. That's what you want from this kind of movie. It'll bog the story down with a lot of baggage. And as I mentioned in the intro, I think it's important that it's not her physical strength that gets her to do what she's doing. It's her knowledge of plant medicine and animal behavior that makes a difference. And I really think the central performance is really compelling because this character spends most of this movie reacting to what happens around her, which is risky because if you don't have a strong actor doing that in your central role, they risk coming off as passive. And I just think the way that this actor really imbues her body with this kind of sense of self-confidence, it's fantastic. It kind of borders on hubris, too, which is important, because if this movie was simply, look, she can do everything the men can do, only better, it might come off a bit didactic, but she's human, she's flawed, she's stubborn, she's allowed to screw off.
Yeah.
Talk more about this performance.
One of the first things we do is see her fail a couple times, at least. I think that really endears you to the character, and it also just shows how good Amber Midthunder is in this role. She is just, like you said, like embodies this role of a young girl who really wants to prove herself to her brother, to her family, to her tribe.
What do you think left those tracks? And skinned that snake. And before I fell, I saw lightning in the trees.
Nadu.
There's something else out there.
And if there is, I'll get it.
We need to go back out. Far, beyond the ridgeline.
No.
Okay, well, I'll hunt alone if I have to.
You can't.
Do I need your permission, War Chief?
They do it in the best way, where it's, you know, it's not that she can do it and, you know, nobody believes her. It's that she needs to also kind of believe in herself throughout this and prove to others that she can do things. And I felt that was a really nice kind of a underline here in what otherwise could be kind of a two-dimensional action film.
Right, exactly. And that's, I think that comes down to direction as much as acting, because those of us who are extremely online might remember Dan Trachtenberg. He was one of the hosts of a thing called The Totally Rad Show, which was this pop culture video podcast I used to watch back from 2007 to 2012. And you could tell that he was notable even then for having a very deep passion for and familiarity with film, especially genre film. So he did 10 Cloverfield Lane, which took place mostly in an underground bunker that was very tense and intimate. And this is the opposite. This is really expansive. It's all set in the great outdoors. What'd you think of his work here?
Well, yeah, so I love 10 Cloverfield Lane, and I'm glad to see that, you know, the shine didn't come off the apple with his second feature-length film. You said it's not intimate. I found it very intimate. There's very few characters, just like in 10 Cloverfield. It's mostly centers around Nadu, the main character, and her brother Tabe. Or, most importantly, Sari the dog, yeah, played by the wonderful Coco.
Some of their best work.
Amazing debut. You know, give her all the Oscars, you know, for pet acting. What was the question again? I got distracted by thinking about dogs.
Well, just about the Dan Trachtenberg, because this is, as our producers pointed out, this is clearly an action movie, but there is a kind of thoughtfulness here. There's kind of an introspection to it. And say what you will about the original Predator film, but introspective is not a word that leaps to mind.
What I keep calling it to people is if A24 made a Predator movie, because it really, it looks beautiful. It has that kind of jarring violin music going throughout it that, you know, you could hear in something like The Witch. One of the things also that gets talked about with this is that it was released only on Hulu, even though it's supposed to initially be a theatrical release. And I think that that is just one of the biggest flaws here, if we can call it that. Mm-hmm. It looks so good. It should have been on a big screen. Watching it on smaller screens only does it a disservice.
No, I agree with that. Although, I gotta say, the only time you see the budget is with some of the CGI animals. There's some wonkiness there, just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about Amber Midthunder, but the other half of that equation is her older brother, played by Dakota Beavers. What'd you think of that relationship?
Yeah. It doesn't take long to like kind of understand the dynamic between them. He is the bigger brother, and also he's the an aspiring warrior in the tribe, and so he wants to take the lead on things. Some of the dialogue between them did feel a little bit ham-fisted. I mean, they're young actors. It's, you know, it's hard to bring that kind of same emotional gravitas as people with more experience. But, you know, Amber Midthunder on her own doing her hunter thing, you know, fighting off the predator. I mean, all of those scenes were fantastic. All of the action scenes were amazing. And, you know, there are lots of tense scenes, like when she's trapped in a beaver dam, you know, while a bear attacks her. And you could feel real fear. She has very expressive eyes. Yeah. And so it was, you know, I felt like a lot of tension in those scenes, and could feel the terror coming off of her.
No, absolutely. And you know, the dialogue between brother and sister, the thing you want to avoid in any period piece like this is for it to sound too contemporary. You know, we didn't get any like talk to the hand or, you know, or it's not about you or anything like that. But sometimes we get a little close, sometimes. But overall, man, this thing, it just knows that we know what the deal is, and it just doesn't waste any time getting to what we know. I mean, I think it's like 11 minutes in when we start to see, oh, I see what this film is about.
Yeah. And then by minute 30, you know pretty much what the stakes are. And that was another thing that I really loved about this. The pacing is just amazing. It really just throws you right into the movie. And it, from beginning to end, it feels like an action horror.
Yeah. So the press materials go out of their way to say how committed the filmmakers were to portraying the height of the Comanche Empire here with a lot of respect and attention to detail. It was originally going to be filmed in Comanche, but Hollywood got to that idea. So now you can watch a dub of it in Comanche. Now, Sam, so no pressure here, but speak for an entire community. Speak for an entire culture. How'd they do?
It's a lot of pressure, Glenn. But yeah, I thought it was good without being, maybe not without being great. I mean, it was still directed and written by, as far as I can tell, non-native director and writer. But they did involve native people in front of and behind the camera. Jane Myers was a producer on this, who is from the Comanche Nation and was doing a lot of the work of making sure that this was historically accurate as possible and fair to the indigenous nations it represents. That being said, I was not coming to the Predator franchise to be the historically accurate, culturally sensitive movie of the year. But I applaud them for, you know, going out of their way to do that. And it sounds like, from what I've read, I'm not a historian, I'm not a cultural expert, but it sounds like they did their due diligence with all these parts. And where it's not historically accurate, it's because they wanted to involve the actors' own cultures into the production. And it's because there were little bits of like their costuming or the face paint that they put on that is unique to them or unique to their tribes. It's, like I said, I didn't expect this to be, you know, everything for every indigenous person ever. But that being said, they more or less did, you know, what you should do in a case like this.
Yeah, and the film does explicitly tackle themes of colonialism. Now, it doesn't do it in a particularly subtle way, but it does. It brings that into the texture of the film in a way I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I do wish... One issue that a lot of movies have is that they do want to kind of think of Native Americans as mostly existing in the past. And so obviously, if you said something in 1719, that is going to be the case here. But I was also kind of hoping that this would be kind of isolated and treat indigenous nations as their own universe. But instead, about halfway through, you know, colonists begin to move in and you see some of that play out. That being said, you know, it was kind of interesting to see this reversal of these French trappers be treated kind of like the invading nation. And also, one thing that I really liked, actually, was that for you get English subtitles for the Comanche in the majority of the film. But when the French show up, you don't get any subtitles for them. So they, if you don't speak French, they are speaking essentially gibberish, which is how it's been for most movies in Hollywood, is that indigenous languages are treated like gibberish, whereas European languages get subtitles and whatnot.
Yeah, we're othering the Europeans.
That's, exactly.
That's cool. That's cool.
Glenn, I wanted to ask you, what do you think of the new Predator design?
Oh, you know, I don't really know the old Predator design that well. I haven't really followed this franchise very closely. What's different? What's unique? What's new?
What I really liked about this adaptation is that they not only set it back 300 years, but they also keep in mind that the Predator is, you know, 300 years back in its history. And so it has a different mask design. It wears a skull, an alien skull, instead of a metal helmet. And it has a little bit more primitive weaponry, primitive relative to the Predator, which is to say, normally he has these awesome green blasters that cut people's heads off and shoot arms off and whatnot. But instead, he has these metal spears that shoot from his wristband. Mm-hmm. I thought that was an interesting way to take it. You know, nobody really thinks of like the aliens having their own respective history and their own technology that they work through different prequels and sequels.
Cool. It's all very cool. Well, the film itself doesn't suggest a sequel, but weirdly, the credit sequence does, if you follow it to the end.
In a way that's very similar to 10 Cloverfield Lane, I should say, if people watch to the end of both
Absolutely.
Movies.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to a sequel or do you want to see Dan Trachtenberg like do something that's not a sequel or a prequel?
I don't want that. I want, you know, the Predator to go all over. I you know, do this with other films, you know, have the Predator drop in on feudal Japan or drop in World War II, you know, just have him wherever, you know. I think that's a fun kind of format that now we have a little bit more lease on. That seems like a rich territory to mine. You know, there's plenty of different types of hunters and warriors throughout human history. And so that just seems like fertile ground to me.
Yeah. The Roaring Twenties. 23 Skidoo. Oh, you kid. That'd be fun. Well, we want to know what you think about Prey. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Sam Yellowhorse Kessler, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Glenn.
Great talk. And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced by Hafsa Fatima and edited by Mike Katziff, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. I'm Glenn Weldon, and we'll see you all tomorrow.